Welcome to the Scary Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Swinger and Mentor Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast and leave us an awesome 5-star review and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk about some recent news headlines and hopefully provide you with some insight, analysis, and practical applications that you can take into the office to help you protect your organization.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
Takes less time these days to get ransomware than it took me to get my driver's license last time I went to the DMV.
And they've even gotten more efficient.
Our article for today is another exciting discussion about ransomware, because ransomware is everywhere. It is called Countdown to Ransomware, Analysis of Ransomware Attack Timelines. And it comes to us from Security Intelligence. Quick summary of the article is it is a summary of another report, which we are summarizing today on the podcast. IBM X-Force has been analyzing the timelines of ransomware attacks for the past few years and standardized and charting how long it takes for attackers to perform the major stages of their ransomware attacks. And amusingly enough, they said that there are 5 stages of a ransomware attack, and then they proceeded to describe 4 stages. I think the one that they skipped is how the interactive or the initial access brokers get the credentials to start with. I think that's the first one, but that can sometimes take, you know, days to weeks to month to get, and it's difficult to chart how long that takes. So I think they just left that out of the analysis, but the 4 stages that they actually described are: establish the interactive access, move laterally, go from the regular access to privileged access to Active Directory, and then deploy the ransomware at scale. And then they looked at how long it took to do each of those stages, and we'll talk about that in detail. The average overall duration of an enterprise ransomware attack was reduced by 94% between 2019 and 2021, which is a really impressive reduction. And frankly, if my company had improved that much in the last 2 years for any of our security metrics, we would be ecstatic.
Or for any business metrics. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, and this is going to sound kind of bad, but, you know, this is the free market at work, you know, because these ransomware people, they don't have to adhere to regulation, business licensing, any of the other things that inhibit business. You know, this is the actual free market at work, and they're able to do, you know, have that kind of 94% improvement in just 3 years. Well, no, it's just 2 years, but that's incredible.
Yeah. 2019, the average ransomware attack took over 2 months to go from initial access to deployment. In 2020, it was down to 9.5 days. Mostly due to the access broker service creation and ransomware as a service. And then in 2021, this went down to 3.85 days.
Yeah. So that even sees new entrants into the market for what they saw as a service that was missing, you know, the access broker. Yeah. So this has got to be the best quote from the whole article, though. And this kind of sets the stage. The ransomware attacks have continually been successful against organizations who have not implemented effective measures to combat the threat of ransomware.
My God.
I mean, that's genius. I would have never guessed that was true.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe it either. If you're not prepared to combat ransomware, you're going to get hit with ransomware. My God. So, and as an additional data point, a month ago, we did discuss, there was a DFIR report article where they found a sample of quantum ransomware that went from initial access to domain-wide ransomware in 3 hours and 44 minutes, which, judging by this article, that kind of looks like the future of ransomware, right? And how does an enterprise respond to that? Less than 4 hours? If I recall correctly, the average large enterprise, their MTTR is somewhere around 24 hours. I mean, a really mature organization probably has an MTTR of 4 to 8 hours. And small companies, we're probably talking 72 hours to a week.
Yeah, and you've got to move to automation in some way.
Now, that's assuming you detect it. I mean, my assumption is with something like ransomware, if your AV detects it, your AV is going to stop it. So, yeah. Although I guess,
What I was thinking about was, we talked several times about risk-based alerting. So if you do end up detecting this through a risk-based alert where you're looking at several different things, where the automation comes into play is when you've made the determination, you hit the big red button over helpfully prevent it from spreading laterally throughout the organization any farther than it's already gone. So maybe it takes you 2.5 hours or whatever to do the analysis. But once you've done the analysis, you don't have to delay in your response to prevent, additional compromise or additional lateral.
No, and your point too is where a lot of times the detections here don't cross the threshold. Because if you're doing signature-based alerting, you're looking for stuff that's either a sure thing or a near sure thing. Like in terms of malware detections, you're looking at highs and criticals and maybe mediums. You're not looking at the lows. You may not be looking at the heuristic stuff. You're probably not looking at a lot of the lateral movement type stuff because it's heuristics based, it's behavior based. And somebody that's, RDPing into a different system may trigger that and you'll get a lot of false positives there. But with the risk-based alerting, you may be able to pick up on this a lot faster because you're going to see a lot of those small detections that you wouldn't have normally triggered on anyways that add up. Yeah. And then maybe you might be able to cross a threshold where you can do that automated stuff. Because that's always the problem with the automated responses, right? Is how do you know when you're sure enough to really clamp down on it and make sure that you're stopping it while not interrupting business for no good reason?
Right. And that should really be something kind of outlined in your IR plan, because you have an incident with the incident lead, I'm forgetting the right title at the moment, but you have an individual who has the authority during the investigation of an incident in order to make the declaration and begin implementing response measures.
Yeah. And when you've got 4 days, you've got time to do that. If you've got 4 hours, you may not have time to do that.
Well, I'm saying if you got a well-documented IR plan, though, then that individual takes that responsibility. It's almost like in Roman times when they would appoint a dictator. And, when Rome was an actual republic, before it morphed into an empire, they did things the slow and bureaucratic way with the Senate and voting and all that stuff. But when there was a crisis, they would appoint a dictator. And that's where their term dictator actually comes from. And then dictator would have absolute authority while they were in this appointment. And so it's the same kind of idea about if you document it well enough within your IR plan, the individual that you have designated as the response leader or whatever, like I said, typical title for that at the moment, but they will have the authority based on that document to perform those response actions without introducing too much bureaucracy and delay into the reaction response.
Like I said, though, my only concern about that is if the timing on this keeps driving down to where it's under 4 hours, you don't have much time for that. That's all. Like 4 days still gives you time. Once you get to sub 1 day, you're going to start struggling.
You mean just to make the decision that you should do something is what you're saying.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I think that most people that work on business timescales are used to being able to hem and haw over decisions for multiple days. So, and I've definitely something I've seen in the past too, whenever we've had these discussions, whenever we've started to involve business leaders around, do we contain this or not? Do we stop this or not? Which is back to your point within a well-written IR plan with well-socialized roles where you have one person who says, yes, we are going to do that, vastly simplifies that. Anyways. So differences in the major stages. So everybody up until now, everything that we've talked about is kind of well known. Like everybody knows ransomware is getting faster. There's a bunch of improvements in the service, et cetera, et cetera. What they did that's kind of cool is that they broke down each of these stages and they looked at the reduction in timeline for each of these stages. So first of all, transfer of access from the access broker to the ransomware operator. In 2019, getting access from those original credential seller, you know, used to be kind of on the dark web. You would go on some forums and purchase credentials. Used to take almost 1,200 hours, which is quite a while. But in 2020, that dropped down to 9.7 hours. And then 2021, 1.2 hours. So getting the credentials now is like running an errand. It's like going to Target.
1,100 hours to 10.
Yeah.
In 1 year.
1 year. And then another a further like 85% reduction the next year. Wow. That's like Amazon. No, that's better than Amazon. I'm trying to think of something like what? That's like going to iTunes, like being able to just download your MP3s from ordering them from like Columbia Music or something.
Or having to go to a music store.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Then the second one was from going from that interactive session, from getting then to your first lateral movement. In 2019, this took an average of 179 hours, which is what, about a week? 24 hours in a day times 7 days is 144. Yeah, it's about a week. Now in 2020, that was reduced to about 58 hours. So it's not bad, about a 66% reduction. In 2021, 43 hours. So not much reduction, not nearly as much reduction there. It's an improvement, but that's more of a normal improvement.
To be honest, I'm surprised it's as high as 43 hours.
Yeah, that's still almost 2 days. I think that's probably, I don't know. That may be still a case of them, because we'll talk later about the various methods they use for that initial access. So that still may be a function of them like blasting out the credentials across a whole bunch of places and then waiting to see who dials back.
Well,
rather than
just
targeting
moving
a single company.
Well, if I understand this point correctly, it's moving from the beachhead to somewhere else. Within the organization. So it might be that it's 4 to 3 hours strictly because they're being cautious about not being detected, because this is really the most sensitive part of their operation.
That's possible
right here
too.
Where being caught is going to get them absolutely nothing before, or they're able to get farther in. And this is where they're going to be doing most of their activity, where the likelihood of being identified is the highest. So it's probably simply a matter of them being cautious why it takes so long.
That's fair. No, and you're right, because the initial access broker, they're not just handing out creds, they're handing out access to established malware or established remote access tech. So it's not like they have to wait for, you know, someone to phone home or something. So you're right. That's interesting. Yeah, that is kind of weird. All right. And then the next one, also another big improvement, the time between their first lateral movement to when they get their domain admin credentials. 2019, 65 hours, almost 3 days. That's kind of a surprise. That's quite a while. 2020, 43 hours, almost 2 days. 2021, 1.2 hours. And they called out specifically the zero logon exploit. That is a logon that, I'm sorry, that's not a logon. That is an exploit, a 2022 CVE that allows an unauthenticated attacker with network access to gain domain admin credentials if you have network access to a domain controller. They said that was the big driver there of getting that number down. So once they've started making their lateral movement, they are able to get those domain admin credentials real quick.
See, this is where they're less concerned with patching the escalation of privilege vulnerabilities. You're like, oh, well, they have to have access first.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, it's inside the network. You know, we need to patch the external stuff first. Yeah. But you need to patch the internal stuff too.
Yeah. And they should take the escalation of privileges more seriously than they do, I think.
Yeah. Yep. And then finally, once they have the domain admin credentials, how long does it take them to deploy the ransomware? 2019. 385 hours. That is over 2 weeks. It's quite a while. 2020, 92 hours, about half a week. 2021, still 65 hours. It's almost 3 days. Yeah. So even after they've gotten the domain admin credentials, you still have a window of time sometimes before they deploy the malware. So yeah, that was kind of a surprise to me.
I think this is another one of the things, you know, we were talking about how they're being cautious at the outset. This is another point where they could be caught in foil for the most part, because if they don't get enough ransomware deployed, they're still not going to be successful in getting anybody out of it. You know, if you only get five machines encrypted before you get caught, I'm not sure if you're going to get any ransom out of that versus you get the entire enterprise
encrypted. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I wonder if this is the time where they're deploying the ransomware, but they haven't activated it yet.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I guess it depends on the crew. So I'm sure some of the crews, they encrypt as they deploy, and other ones probably do a full deployment, then encrypt. Just a matter of which methodology they want to utilize.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. All right. So in addition, they also talk about the variation in tools that are used. Some of these are surprising, some of these are not. The initial access, this was quite a surprise. This was actually a huge surprise to me, and I have to really wonder about some of their numbers, because I find it, frankly, not believable. They said that 50% of the initial access was through Cobalt Strike in 2021, and then the other 50% was through various remote management tools such as Screen Connect, LogMeIn, TeamViewer, AnyDesk, stuff like that. I am shocked. There's no other malware. Like, if you go back to 2021 or 2019, PowerShell Empire was used quite a bit. If you go to 2020, I said 2020 too many times, there was like Meterpreter, PowerShell Empire. There were some other pieces of malware, but for some reason, Cobalt Strike is the big one now.
It's the market leader. Because it's just Cobalt Strike. I mean, I don't know if they have polymorphic malware or what. Would you think that then all you'd have to do is ensure that your antivirus, your EDR detected Cobalt Strike, then you'd be automatically dropped your risk by 50%.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but that was my initial, when I was writing under the why does this matter or what should you do about it part of our notes, my initial thing that I wrote was make sure your AV detects Cobalt Strike. And then I was sitting here being like, it can't be that easy. If it was that easy, we would have solved this problem already. There's got to be something I'm missing here.
Well, I wouldn't say you've solved that problem. You would shift the problem somewhere else.
That's fair.
But you would certainly reduce your risk of being had by Cobalt Strike.
Well, I mean, that's definitely something to look at, is figure out, or if you're doing pen tests, if you have a pen tester, I would check and make sure they're using Cobalt Strike and work with them and see if there's things you can do. But we'll get into that as we get later. Lateral movement was all using built-in Windows tools, RDP, SMB, admin shares.
Yeah, so I can't believe that, you know, well, I guess it kind of makes sense, though, that this is just two things, really. Because SMB and admin shares, they're
the same thing.
They're not exactly the same thing, but they use the same protocols and same methods.
Yeah.
So you've got two things. So if you're able to fix any kind of remote access in how they do share across the organization, I know that the admin shares and stuff are important to the management of an AD environment. But, you know, if you got a handle on those two aspects, it seems like that would go a long way towards helping your ransomware vulnerability as well.
Yeah. Yep. Especially if you had really prescribed like RDP, like jump boxes, an attacker wouldn't necessarily know that. And it might make them really easy to detect. But anyways, so when it comes to getting the domain admin creds, the two big ones there were LSAS dump and Mimikatz, and then zero logon was a kind of a distant third, but that's probably because the zero logon's a 2020 CVE. I imagine it's getting more and more patched over time. Then there was a couple other smaller ones, an Elbrute, Klingon Wrap, and then the ransomware deployment mostly used built-in Windows tooling, SMB plus WMIC. RDP, PS exec was 25%. So again, using built-in Windows tools, living off the...
What's interesting to me in that they stated in here is that the ransomware attack lifecycle decreased significantly but they did not find any substantial changes in the tools, techniques, or procedures by the threat actors. So they say that really all this efficiency has boils down to the better relationship between access broker and the ransomware crews. And additionally, being more efficient at moving from privilege access to Active Directory and deploying the ransomware. So, the way that they state this is almost misstated, because they say there's no substantial changes in tools, techniques, or procedures used by the threat actors. But I would say that, if your ability to coordinate with the access brokers to the ransomware crew, that's a change in procedure. They're doing something that's brought that timeline down. Yeah. And if they're more efficient at getting privileged access to AD and deploying ransomware, that's also a procedural technique change that has improved efficiency. I think this is kind of misstated the way that they put that.
I would say if you look at the tools between 2019 and 2021, some things have not changed. The ransomware deployment, PSExec, SMB plus WMIC, and RDP have been used for deployment for 2019 through 2021. Some things have changed, like group policy has been added, but they're still using mostly the same stuff. Lateral movement, same stuff. Admin shares, RDP, SMB, RPC. The Cobalt Strike, use of Cobalt Strike for the interactive sessions for the initial getting in has been growing. So I would wager that that's really hard to stop. So I'm wondering if the main thing is that they're getting harder to detect upon the breaking in. And that's leading to them having more success for the rest of it. Because honestly, the lateral movement stuff is really hard to detect. And the deployment, the ransomware deployment, if they're using built-in Windows tools again, that's hard to detect as well, assuming that your AV can't detect the ransomware.
But that doesn't really shorten timelines, though, unless they're being less cautious because they don't feel they need to be.
No, that's fair. That's fair. No, I was more talking to why they were seeing more success rather than talking about the timeline. I think the timeline changes is more about the service, about the fact that you've got basically groups that are professionalizing it and then selling it as a service.
Right. So they're just, maybe they're misstating the way that this has actually gotten efficient. It's not that the ransomware crews have gotten more efficient or anything. Maybe it's really just straight out access brokers have gotten better at turning their access into revenue for themselves. You know, they've gotten better at getting their customers what they want.
Well, and the vast majority of the drop was from the access brokers. I mean, if you look at the drop in the interactive session to lateral movement, that was 140 hours. The drop from domain admin was 64 hours, and the drop from ransomware deployment was 320 hours. Mm. Like, that's a lot, but the drop from the access broker was 1,000 hours. Like, the drop from the rest of them was like half of the drop from the access broker alone.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is that the increased efficiency has got less to do with the ransomware crews and more to do with the access brokers.
Yeah.
The access brokers have been more efficient at getting the access to the ransomware crews. So I think that's where the timelines have improved. The access brokers have improved greatly. The ransomware crews have improved somewhat.
And apparently the zero admin, they said that the zero admin or zero logon was a big part of the domain admin. Like, that cut a big chunk out of domain admin time. And then the last one, the domain admin to ransomware, they have cut 320 hours off of that one. That may be just because of better written ransomware that can be deployed more consistently, faster. I don't know what their scripts look like for ransomware deployment. They may have a better, more robust deployment model, whereas it used to be, put together with baleen wire and twine.
Right. So that would be a total improvement.
They're professionalizing. They're working on their support model.
Yeah. I mean, well, they don't get more successful by having the tools get worse.
That's true. Unless they shoot the rival gangs and they're the only tool.
Well, even so, if you look at it this way, though, if you look at it as a competitive market, You know, if you've got ransomware crew A, B, and C, the even if ransomware B were able to eliminate ransomware crews A and C, unless they improve their tools and their ability to actually ransomware their targets, they still aren't going to increase their revenue that much. Because if they continually get caught or they continually take too long to actually get the full enterprise encrypted, then that's still going to decrease their profit. So they're still incentivized to improve their encrypt their tool to do the encryption, even without competitors in the market. Because in that point, they're competing against their targets.
All right. So why does this matter? Well, ransomware, we did hear earlier this year that it was not the most important type of crime in terms of financial impact. It's definitely the one that keeps your CISO and your board up at night. Although, as we'll talk about next week, definitely grew the most last year, according to the DBIR. So we'll talk about that next week. So it's definitely important to have a good handle on it and make sure that your protections are in place. So what should you do about it? They have 5 suggested controls. Number 1, restrict and implement multi-factor authentication and privileged account management or privileged accounts. That makes sense. Even if the attacker manages to dump the creds, you won't be able to just use the creds if you also have to use MFA. Number 2, prohibit workstation login with domain name and creds. Again, makes sense. Prevents the creds from being available if the attacker is on there and able to use Mimikatz or dump the LSS. Number 3, restrict SMB, RDP, RPC for internal communication. And I will add here that you also need to monitor that. Ideally, you would have some type of jump host or some method of restricting RDP so that people can't just RDP directly everywhere. That makes that almost impossible to monitor and alert off of because you just have this giant spider web of RDP connections, and trying to create some sort of behavioral or statistical monitoring is impossible. But if you have a jump host or, you know, some restrictions so that everybody has to go to this host first and then they go out to where they're going, then you might be able to detect an attacker because they won't know that and they will go somewhere else first. And then you can flag that.
Yeah. Number 4. The thing is with that, I mean, I think the jump post thing cannot be overstated, to be honest. And a lot of people will push back, and a lot of engineers are not thrilled about the idea or the concept of jump post, but it's really a big deal because it allows you to do a couple of things. There is that it limits the amount of attack servers from which an attacker could get to the entire network, because not only do you limit access from all your administrator workstations to the jump host, but also those administrator workstations cannot get to all the other servers and workstations on the net. So you should not have jump hosts just for your servers, but also for your employee workstations as well, so that you can't jump from one workstation because what you should be doing is having your administrator workstations and your regular user workstations in different subnets. So you can't move from any system in the admin network to any system on the employee network and have a jump host in between for that as well to limit that access.
Number 4, implement managed service accounts.
So this is where you use like a CyberArk or a Thycotic secret server to manage your service accounts. So, you know, you prevent interactive login, the CyberArk or the secret server, which would be my preference. And CyberArk is overly complicated and overly expensive personally, where those applications will rotate the password and ensure that the password is of significant strength, because you don't have to have any user type it in. So you could have 50 character service account passwords or 100 character passwords for that matter, provided your environment supports it, because no human will have to ever type those passwords in. And then you can rotate them on a schedule if you like with the CyberArk or Thycotic automatically.
No. Number 5, restrict software execution on domain controllers and secure administrative systems. I assume this is to prevent Mimikatz and other pieces of malware from running on there. I know everybody hates whitelisting applications, but for things like domain controllers and other secure systems, it shouldn't be too much overhead.
Yeah. And one of the additional things you could do on top of what they recommended is limit access to the shares. So at least as far as the administrative shares go, only members of the local computer admin group or backup operators group has access to the administrative shares. So if you provide a huge number of accounts from having that access, then you've kind of walled off the admin shares as well. And as far as shares go, you should only allow file shares on your file share servers outside of the admin shares. You know, don't let workstations have regular shares, and don't let servers that are not actual file shares have open shares on them as well. And some of these things can be disabled, and there'll be a link in the show notes to a Microsoft article that talks about that.
All right. And I would also add that you should probably be watching out for the remote management software on your endpoints, since those make up about 50% of the entry points. If you do not have a policy around them, you should have a policy around them, and then you should be configuring your AV or your EDR software to block them if you have a policy that says you shouldn't have them. And then you should be looking into Cobalt Strike, detecting it. If your EDR or AV does detect it, then great. If it doesn't, then look into things like statistically detecting beaconing activity, look for the command and control activity, stuff like that. Keep your patches and your AV up to date. I'd like to guess that that doesn't need to be said, but maybe they mentioned that 2020 Windows patch is still being used for 17% of the attacks last year in 2021. That kind of hurts.
And well, they say, you know, if something goes without saying, then it goes without saying. Yeah. So it's good to, you know, make the statement on occasion to reiterate that that's still critically important.
Yeah. I mean, we've said this before, but like 80 or 90% of what I do in incident response wouldn't need to be done if all the hygiene was done. Now, I wish it was that easy. It's not, never is, but.
But anyway. So that's all with the articles we have for today. So thank you for joining us, and follow us at Serengeti Sec on Twitter and subscribe on your favorite podcast app.